You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Community Oncology Connection Smartcast, microlearning podcast series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Sylvia Hanna, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I will be hosting today's podcast, which is the third in a series of three podcasts. In this series, we will be covering the management of different types of patients with non-small cell lung cancer. At times, there can be the incorrect belief that these patient populations are ineligible for certain treatment options due to the limited literature or exclusion from clinical trials that were used to obtain FDA approval. In this series, we will discuss the geriatric population and immunocompromised patients, including those with autoimmune disorders and HIV. In the first episode, we reviewed a case of a geriatric patient with stage 4 adenocarcinoma of the lung. In the second episode, we discussed the case of a patient with squamous cell lung cancer and a comorbid autoimmune disease. In this episode, we will review a case of a patient with adenocarcinoma with a history of HIV. This podcast will include discussion of the treatment management strategies and applicable clinical trial data. Joining me today is Dr. Jared Weiss, Professor of Medicine and Section Chief of Thoracic and Head Neck Oncology at the University of North Carolina, Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Welcome, Dr. Weiss. It's so good to have you with us today.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Dr. Weiss, let's begin with the case of a patient with adenocarcinoma with a history of HIV. Can you tell us about this patient?
Sure. This is a very active, very fit 40-year-old man with a history of HIV and no history of smoking, who has CT imaging conducted as part of a trauma workup after a motor vehicle collision. It shows a spiculated lung nodule and multiple bilateral pulmonary nodules. A biopsy is done, which shows CK7 positive, TTF1 positive adenocarcinoma. MRI of the brain shows three tiny metastases. He lacks neurologic symptoms or deficits on neurologic examination. His viral load is undetectable. His only medication is triplet HART in the form of bictegravir, emtricitabine, and tenofovir. The patient wishes to attack his cancer as soon as possible with the most aggressive and effective therapy available.
Dr. Weiss, how do you approach a treatment plan in an HIV patient in the setting of polypharmacy?
Patients with HIV were excluded from many of the studies that define standard of care. The exclusion of patients with well-controlled HIV from clinical trials is no longer recommended. 2020 FDA guidance advocates eligibility for patients with CD4 T-cell counts greater than or equal to 350 cells per microliter and without AIDS-defining opportunistic infections within the past year. NCCN guidelines, based on data, advise that patients with HIV who develop cancer should be offered the same treatments as HIV-negative individuals. The major difference in my care is the polypharmacy, and I manage this in consultation with a thoracic oncology pharmacist with expertise in the area who will review together with me and the patient the medication list and the medications being considered for treatment to make sure that we are aware of any potential drug interactions and mitigate them.
And what would be the next step in the management plan for a patient like this?
The most important next step is molecular testing. This patient has a high probability of having a molecular marker that indicates sensitivity to a TKI with brain-penetrating properties. Because of these elements and because his cancer is asymptomatic, most thoracic experts would favor waiting on the molecular results. If for some reason treatment is considered prior to the return of full data, the combination of pemetrexed and carboplatin without immunotherapy would be preferred over a triplet or quadruplet regimen containing immunotherapy. This is because, number one, the targeted therapy is going to be the most effective option, and we want to wait for that. In particular, this patient has three tiny brain mets that are asymptomatic, and many of the TKIs are brain penetrating, so this patient might avoid brain radiotherapy. But further, if you're pushed to therapy, either because of a physical problem or patient values for urgent therapy, you really want to be sure to omit the immunotherapy. Because if you give that first cycle of triplet, get back, for example, EGFR mutation, and then give the EGFR TKI, you're more likely to have inflammatory side effects at that point than if you had omitted the immunotherapy. You can always graft the immunotherapy onto cycle two if the testing ultimately proves it appropriate.
And in this patient, what did the molecular testing show?
In the real case, the molecular testing returned with a classical EGFR mutation and a PD-L1 of 80%.
And based on these findings, what was the management plan?
This patient was treated with osimertinib. His cancer read the textbook. His PFS was 20 months, at which time progression was noted at multiple sites in the body, but the brain MRI continued to show no evidence of disease after a complete response. The patient remained very fit and very motivated for aggressive therapy.
In the face of progression, what treatment options were considered and what were the patient's desires?
Based on a PD-L1 of 80%, this was a very educated patient who had read online and asked about monoimmunotherapy. The problem is that pembrolizumab is very unlikely alone to control disease and unlikely in combination to add to most cytotoxic regimens because of the presence of the EGFR mutation. Even with a very high PD-L1, EGFR is a powerful negative predictor of efficacy of immunotherapy, either given alone or with cytotoxic doublet chemotherapy. Regimens that would have been considered in the pre-immunotherapy era, such as carboplatin and pemetrexed, with or without bevacizumab, may be considered. Subgroup analysis of the EMPOWER 150 study suggested that patients with EGFR may benefit from the addition of atezolizumab to carboplatin plus paclitaxel plus bevacizumab. And this regimen may be considered for fit and motivated patients with EGFR mutation following treatment with all available tyrosine kinase inhibitor therapy.
Dr. White, since we're discussing unique patient populations, can patients with HIV receive immunotherapy?
Absolutely. Patients with HIV can receive immunotherapy, and our data tells us that tolerance is similar to patients without HIV and that efficacy is similar to patients without HIV. Of note, immunotherapy can be effective against brain metastasis. A further note, when treating brain metastasis, whether you're doing it with a TKI or with immunotherapy, whether that's with or without chemotherapy, it is absolutely critical to follow the brain with serial MRI.
And to switch gears a bit, if this patient had a STK11 mutation, how would the treatment plan differ?
We have high quality data that EGFR, ALK, and probably RAT are powerful negative predictors for immunotherapy efficacy. STK11 is a controversial and emerging biomarker that may be a negative predictor for immunotherapy efficacy. And the more the data comes out, the more it seems like it's probably true. We first had data showing it as a negative predictor for PD-1 monotherapy. And further, we now have data that in the context of STK11, there's less benefit from adding immunotherapy to chemotherapy. In my practice, I do believe this data, and I favor the avoidance of monoimmunotherapy or immunotherapy plus cytotoxic doublet chemotherapy in these populations. Even more recently, we have data now from 3 studies of dual immunotherapy that raise an interesting hypothesis consistent across the 3 studies that combined immunotherapy with a PD-1 inhibitor and a PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibitor together with CTLA-4 inhibition may actually benefit these patients. We have data from 9LA and 227 with ipi-nivo, either alone or with chemotherapy, suggesting that the STK11 patient may derive benefit from dual immunotherapy. And much more recently, we have similar data backing this up from the Poseidon study of chemo plus durva-tremi showing the exact same thing. And so while we don't have a prospective study of just STK11 patients, with 3 studies with the same mechanism showing the same thing, this influences my practice. And what I'm doing is offering my STK11 patients dual immunotherapy with one of these options.
To tie things up, Dr. Weiss, returning back to this patient, how did he do on treatment?
So his targeted therapy went right up until the day before we started chemotherapy. And that's important for avoiding flare reaction. He was then treated with the quadruplet regimen. And after 2 cycles, his imaging showed a minor response that deepened a bit after 4 cycles. And he remains, I think we're about 6 months in on bevatezo maintenance, living quite well. At the time his cancer grows again, we'll probably repeat a biopsy to repeat molecular testing and look to see if there might be a new EGFR targeted option based on new data around resistance mechanisms that we might be able to get him either off label or on a clinical trial.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss. It's wonderful to know that immunocompromised patients have treatment options that otherwise would have been unavailable or limited.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. And thank you in particular for the opportunity to talk about niche populations who were frequently marginalized and excluded from otherwise effective treatment options. Age alone should not be an exclusion criteria for full appropriate treatment. HIV alone should not be an exclusion from full appropriate treatment. And the existence of an autoimmune or inflammatory disease after appropriate characterization and consideration of patient values should not be an exclusion from full appropriate treatment. Further, as our data evolves, we see niche populations that may not benefit from immunotherapy, except with particular regimens. And we need to pay attention as this data evolves to maximize benefits for these populations, such as EGFR, ALK, and STK11. And I'm really grateful to be able to talk about these things. They're not frequent topics in CME education. They're a little more complicated and difficult to talk about, but they are absolutely critical for the benefit of these patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Weiss, for joining us. This was very informative. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please join us for the other two podcasts where we discussed geriatric patients and immunocompromised patients, particularly those with autoimmune diseases. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council of Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.